Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Money Crimes is a podcast all about the dark side of finance and sometimes murder. Find Money Crimes on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
They've been doing all this without Max Strus. Really? They are shooting the leather off of the basketball. When you go and you look at their percentages, you're like, what the hell is going on in Cleveland? They have a couple guys shooting 50%. At one point, I think Ty Jerome was shooting like 56% from three this year. That's why he's in the running for Sixth Man of the Year. Look at that. Look at that. Last one up, Defensive Player of the Year. Listen, this one seems like the most obvious, but...
we've done some calculations.
We did some quick math. Quick math. And George, research department, Italian George, please tell me how many games Victor Wembanyama is on pace to play this season for the NBA.
So, based on what he's played thus far, through 25, 24 games, he has played 79% of the possible games so far this season.
What is 79% of 82?
If that pace continues, if he plays at 79%, which we all look at and say, hey, it's most of the games, but then he will play 64 out of the necessary 65 games necessary.
64 out of 65. Sorry, Victor Wembanyama. I cannot give you Defensive Player of the Year right now. You do not meet the criteria, which means come on down, Jaren Jackson Jr. He is your Defensive Player of the Year a quarter into the NBA season. He has been phenomenal for the Memphis Grizzlies. You can't score on him. If Jaren Jackson Jr. is defending you, you might as well just hand him the basketball and say thank you, because you are not putting that ball in the bucket. He is going to block your shot. He's going to lock you up at the perimeter. He can defend bigs. He can defend smalls. He is fantastic. He is one of the reasons the Grizzlies have one of the best defenses in the NBA, if not the reason. Jaren Jackson Jr., come on down. Second Defensive Player of the Year, quarter into the season. Congratulations.
You just earned a Supermax.
You just earned a... Here's $300 million to go with your award as well. I think other guys in the running, Dyson Daniels has been phenomenal for the Hawks. Oh. Phenomenal. Evan Mobley deserves a ton of credit.
Oh, Evan Mobley's
But Jaren Jackson Jr. is a cheat code, and I think the only cheat code in the NBA that's better than him on the defensive end is Victor Wembanyama. But Victor, if you play 64 games, no. That award's going to Jaren Jackson Jr. Coming up next, we'll have Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian. I got to ask him about Jaren Jackson Jr.'s comments about whether or not the 2022 Grizzlies would beat the 2013 Grizzlies. Also got to talk about Bill Belichick. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. I am Connor Dunning, filling in for the big man, Gabe Kuhn. I am now joined by Jeff Calkins, columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show from 9 to 11 a.m. on these airwaves every weekday morning. You can find him on X and Twitter at Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm good, Connor.
We just got a big Grizzlies PR medical update. I don't know if you've seen it yet. Zach Edey is doubtful for the game against the Brooklyn Nets.
That's good. That's progress.
It's very good. It is absolutely progress. I'm excited to see him back. We've had discussions about whether or not Brandon Clark should stay in that starting five. I think he should when Zach Edey comes back. But it's always nice when you get to open up a Grizzlies PR tweet after you flinch when you get that notification and you get to read good news.
It is interesting. No, that is nice. And in a nice week, by the way, for the Grizzlies. Obviously, the triumphant road trip, and now they come back for the revenge game against Brooklyn tomorrow night. And now we get positive injury news as well. It feels like everything's coming up roses for the Grizzlies these days. It is interesting how Zach Edey has he's a guy who, heading into the year, I think we were counting on. Right, counting on him to be impactful right away, as with the general, not a star or anything, but and what's interesting is how I don't think people's long-term thoughts about what he might be has changed one way or another. But Zach Edey has receded in importance slightly and in a way that I think speaks well of the franchise, right? Because it means that they're doing just fine without him and other people stepping into those roles. And so, again, it to me isn't any sign of a lack of optimism about what he might become either this year or going forward. But now you're just counting on him for, boy, it'll be nice. He'll be able to contribute, right? You're not going to have to count on Zach Edey. He will be able to contribute. And that, to me, is a positive thing.
Yeah, I think one of the main concerns of this Grizzlies team heading into the season was going to be their rebounding numbers. But when you look at the rankings right now, the Grizzlies are actually ranked third in team rebounding in the NBA at 47.6%. And I do think the play of guys like Jake Aravia crashing the boards, yep. Jalen Wells has come in, and he's actually been pretty good on the boards. They've been able to do it as a team rather than it just being one guy, because the conversation of Jaren Jackson Jr. is always, well, he can be your four, but if you need him to play your five, is he going to rebound the basketball enough? But then you put a guy like Brandon Clark next to him, high energy, goes after the boards. It seems like that has been able to kind of solve itself, but Zach Edey's certainly going to help that when he comes back.
Oh, no, I think he will help it, and you'll be able to see him progress in all kinds of ways, and I think that's great, too. It's just nice to be able to watch Zach Edey's progression and the ways he contributes without feeling like he has to be awesome Zach Edey for this franchise to be successful, right, this year. And so I think they've obviously found ways to win, even with Zach Edey on the shelf, and not just win, be second in the West.
So staying on Jaren Jackson Jr. for a second, he went on Zach Randolph and Tony Allen's podcast, and I found their conversation to be very interesting. But Jaren Jackson Jr. made the claim that the 2022 Memphis Grizzlies, the team that was second in the West, 56 wins, would beat the 2013 Memphis Grizzlies that made it to the Western Conference Finals 4-1 in the series. Do you agree with Jaren Jackson Jr.?
No.
I do not either. No. I think that 2013 team would absolutely win.
I don't even know who would win, but no one would win 4-1. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
I think it's disrespectful, not for him to say it, but because it's just neither team is so much clearly better than the other team. And of course, basketball has changed, and what would you with Zach? Whatever. Tony and Zach are non-shooters and whatnot. All right, you're going to give the edge at point guard to Ja, but Mike Conley's awesome. So you give the edge there to Ja. Like bigs, I don't know. Like Mark and Zebo versus Jaren and Brandon. I guess I give Mark and Zebo the edge there.
I agree.
And so then the 2013 small forward was...
So a lot of people have been incorrectly putting in Rudy Gay, but that's the season that
Rudy Gay was long gone.
It was Tayshaun Prince. Tayshaun Prince would have been your three.
Yeah, and it wasn't Shane was the 2011. He came in briefly for the 2011. Who else was on that? Who was coming off the bench for that team?
Darrell Arthur was on that team. Mo Spates was on that team.
And that was peak Darrell Arthur. Like that was Darrell Arthur at his zenith, and the truth of the matter is Darrell Arthur was every bit the player that Brandon Clark is before his knee injury, right? Every bit the player that Brandon Clark is, and Brandon Clark is at this point starting for really played a bigger role, whatever. Sort of equivalent though. Darrell Arthur and Brandon Clark sort of rotation bigs, right, on both of those teams. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. I don't think it would be 4-1. Could they have triumphed? Sure. I can see a world where the Ja Grizzlies would have won. But that team was a tough-minded team. Mark was at the peak of powers. Zach was I think it would have gone seven games. How about that?
I think that's fair. And this is the season, too. They had Jared Bayless. They had Quincy Pondexter. Like, that was a pretty deep Grizzlies team. Wayne Ellington was here for 40 games that season, 42% for three. I'll never forget that massive performance he had against the Miami Heat, where it just felt like he could never miss. But yeah, to your point, this is the season that Zach Randolph was an all-star for the Memphis Grizzlies. Marc Gasol won Defensive Player of the Year, and that's why when you look at the starting five, you got Ja versus Mike, and I agree. I think Ja Morant would get a slight edge there. But at shooting guard, Desmond Bane in 2022 against Tony Allen may be offset because one gives you an offensive punch, but the other was arguably the greatest perimeter defender of a generation in the NBA. I watched Tony Allen shut down Kevin Durant.
Tony Allen would have shut the water off Desmond Bane. He wouldn't have, you know, he would have absolutely shut the water off. Tony Allen, you know, so I'm not buying it. And then what?
I was just going to say, a fun wild card of this entire conversation is Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks was on that 2022 team at small forward. Would they be, you know, would Tayshaun Prince be able to mess with Dylan? Would the plan for the 2013 team be let Dylan cook?
Right. I think that's exactly what would have happened. It would have been, and as ill-advised as Tony Allen could be at various moments, he was not as consistently ill-advised as Dylan Brooks was, right? Like he would occasionally give you reasons to hold your head and you know, lament, but not as consistently as Dylan Brooks did. So, I'm not buying this. I'm not buying it. I think it's disrespectful to the big guy. And here's the other truth. The truth of the matter is that team proved that it could figure out ways to win in a way that this team honestly hasn't, right? Win at the highest level. That team was a tough-minded team that figured out ways to win. And this team, ultimately, some of it's been injury-related. A lot of it's been injury-related. Certainly last year it was injury-related. And, you know, and even along the way, it's been injury-related. Like even in the, you know, those series, you had Ja getting hurt. And so... but injuries, availability, I don't know if you've ever heard this, I might coin it. Availability is the best ability. And so you have that going against this version of the team as well. I'm going with the old Grizz, thanks.
I am too. I think I agree with you. I'm going with the old Grizz. If we were talking about the 2024 team and the depth that they have right now and the health that they have right now, and you have the version of Jaren Jackson Jr. that has become one of the best ISO scorers in the NBA, sure, that makes a little bit more sense. You don't have Dylan Brooks on that team. You have a guy in there that fits a role a little bit better. I just think that the separation, you know, of Jaren Jackson Jr. in 2022 and Z-Bo, that's pretty big to me. I think that Z-Bo would, you know, be able to take care of Jaren. But then, for me, it's the Marc Gasol-Steven Adams matchup. I think Marc Gasol would just give Steven Adams fits. He would play him off the court. He wouldn't be able to be out there. You would have to hope that Brandon Clark could defend Marc Gasol, but he's a Hall of Famer, Defensive Player of the Year. I agree with you.
But here's the question. Would Steven Adams, playing for the 22 team, be able to get Zach Randolph to sucker punch him in such a way that Zach would be suspended grizzly on grizzly crime? Could Steven Adams get Zach suspended for the critical game 7 of that series?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm going to be honest. I had kind of completely forgotten about that narrative heading into this game. I was more so thinking, could they get Dylan Brooks to punch somebody? Could the 2013 team get Dylan?
Z-Bo so frustrated with Steven Adams, although you could argue that the Grizzly version of Steven Adams wouldn't be given the benefit of that call, right? So Zach would be allowed to punch Grizzly Steven Adams in a way that he was not allowed to punch Oklahoma City Steven Adams. And so Zach would not be tossed, and so that team would therefore win.
I think that's a good point.
It's a fascinating exercise, this entire exercise. I do think it's true, though, and I think Jaren's right about this, that, and for the reasons that we all acknowledge, the ceiling of this team and the ceiling that team started to be clearly has more potential, right, than the 2013 Grizzlies. I think that is true.
Absolutely.
Because the ceiling of Desmond Bane is higher than the ceiling of Tony Allen, right? The ceiling of Jaren Jackson is really higher than, and as good as Mark was and as good as Z-Bo was at both ends of the court. Like, I don't know. Like, and very clearly the ceiling of Ja is higher than the ceiling of Mike Conley. Mm-hmm. So I think the reason that people should be justifiably excited about this team is the ceiling of this team is higher than any any Grizzlies team that has ever been. Now, it's interesting because I had Chris Harrington on, and he did the Grizzlies mailbag and was asked, what does he believe the ceiling of this team is? And he put it at, this year he thinks the ceiling is the NBA Finals. Now, the reason is he can't imagine the Grizzlies beating Boston in a 7-game series. And so that's why he put the ceiling at the NBA Finals, not at the championship. I think if you are willing to say that this team has a ceiling that is the NBA Finals, I think it's also a team that has a ceiling that is an NBA championship. Because I don't actually think that is so much dramatically. Like, I don't know. If you could say that they can be better than Oklahoma City, and Oklahoma City has been awesome without Chet Holmgren, I don't know. You could then say they can win a championship. Is it fair to say that the ceiling of this team is an NBA Finals, or is the ceiling of this team only a Western Conference Finals because you can't see them getting past an Oklahoma City or a Dallas if they get that far?
That's interesting because we opened the show yesterday with, I think the Grizzlies may be the Western Conference only hope to take down the Oklahoma City Thunder, because when you look at the numbers, they're very similar. Basketball teams, their starting fives are very similar when they match up. I would probably agree that the ceiling for the Grizzlies this season is the NBA Finals. I think that the Boston Celtics aren't being given enough credit as to being an all-time team. Like what they did last year and the amount of wins that they actually had, the totality of wins that they had was like top five in NBA history. And I think that they just kind of play a boring style of basketball. They're just going to bomb threes away and they hit most of them. So people haven't been paying attention to them as much.
There's no incandescent star.
Yeah.
Right? I think we mark them down because we give them demerits because there is not an incandescent star, right? How good could they really be if they're just an accumulation of excellent players? I sort of think there is that impulse to say that. And obviously they're terrific. And so you think there's a gap, a clear gap between Boston at one and Oklahoma City and who at two?
I do. I think that there's a clear gap between Boston and everybody else. It's just I've been watching them play some of the best basketball we've ever seen in the NBA, and they've seemingly gotten better this year. Jason Tatum has shown up with a bit. It's just odd that an NBA champion has a chip on their shoulder this season, and I'm not sure that was a great idea by the rest of the NBA to give it to them. I think the Olympic stuff was a little bit overblown. They won the gold medal. I'm not sure it was the coaching malpractice that all of us tried to make it out to be with Jason Tatum, but at the end of the day, they are trying to prove something. Now, Jason Tatum did get hit today with knee tendonitis, and that's something to keep an eye on. So if they have injuries, sure, the Boston Celtics are going to be vulnerable. But if they head into the playoffs and a finals with the Grizzlies fully healthy, I think it would go 6 or 7, but I do think Boston would walk away the champions.
But don't you also think the same thing in a Western Conference Finals if they're playing Oklahoma City and Chet Holmgren's healthy?
If it's a healthy Grizzlies
talent they have, the long defenders they have, Shea, you know, the like Jalen, they that's a hell of a team. And then adding what they added, don't you think you would also pick Oklahoma City in 6 or 7?
For sake of transparency, when I picked my preseason things, I had the Grizzlies and the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals, and I had the Thunder moving on to the NBA Finals. So, you know, fully healthy, I think the Grizzlies have a puncher's chance. It's going to probably come down to, could Ja go ballistic in that series? If Ja shows up like we've seen him do in playoff series of the past and they're able to stay healthy, I think they got a shot. It's just, I don't know how we allowed Oklahoma City Thunder to add guys like Alex Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein, and all they had to do was give up Josh Giddey and a bag of chips. Right. That was just a horrible decision by the rest of the league to allow that to happen.
I don't think it's made collectively by the rest of the league.
No, that's fair. That's fair. It is the Bulls that they are dealing with, which is, you know.
I don't think that's exactly how it works. But, I think it's unfortunate that they are as deep and as good as they are. But, I mean, you pointed out with Jason Tatum and the health news. In the end, so much of this is ultimately impacted by health, right? And so it's nice, honestly, just to be in this position again, you know, to look up, here you are 25 games in, and it hasn't been perfect because there's been injuries along the way and there's been some nights that made, you know, that were frustrating along the way. But to look up and to be where you are now, here as we're bearing down on Christmas, second in the West, Jaren playing the best basketball of his life, Ja it's probably been a too small a sample given his injuries to say that it's the best basketball of his life, but maybe, you know, certainly if you're looking at both ends of the court, at least arguably the best basketball of his life, and the Grizzlies in second in the West, I think it's, you know, this is a pretty heady time, really.
Well, I think it's the season, outside of that year where they lost to the Warriors, I think it's their best shot to realistically be in the NBA Finals, to win the NBA Finals. Because you talked that 2013 team we just got done talking about, they made it to the Western Conference Finals, and that was great. I don't think a single person in Memphis expected them to beat the Spurs.
There was a colossus in the way.
Yeah.
Right? There was a colossus in the way. I think if you look back, you know, the year that, honestly, it may have been that 2011 was their best chance to get to the finals. That we didn't know it at the time, right? But I think who won that year, who won 2011 was, because they'd obviously knocked off.
That was the Mavericks.
Yeah, it was Dirk and the Mavericks. And that was not there was no colossus in the way, right? And so that may have been, we didn't know it, but that may have been the best chance to win a championship for that version of the Grizzlies. And so you never really quite do know, right, when it's going to come along. But I think that could have been the best chance for that team.
Yeah, and to your point, the biggest difference between this year and last year for me is, like, we've had this four-day stretch of no Grizzlies, and it has felt like 100 years to me. I am very sad that I don't get to watch Memphis Grizzlies basketball tonight, where last year, to be quite honest with you, I was a bit relieved when they weren't playing. I was like, oh my God, yeah. I don't have to watch this random guy play with, you know, G.G. Jackson and Vince Williams Jr. and just hope for the best for next season. It is certainly night and day. Before I let you go, I do have to ask you, Bill Belichick, UNC. I've been hearing for 48 hours now all of the reasons why it may not work at UNC. Why do you think it might work at North Carolina with Bill Belichick?
Well, I mean, it's funny. Like that's sort of where I'm coming from on this. I know all the reasons it won't work, and I think probably those reasons are correct. He's old. He doesn't relate to players. He's never recruited. He doesn't, you know, well, whatever. He never coached in college basketball. I mean, college football, even for one second. Whatever else. Like he's a grump. He doesn't like dealing with alums. He doesn't want to coddle like players have to be. All those reasons. I get it, and it's probably not going to work for that reason, right? But I start with this. When has it ever worked at North Carolina? The last time they won a conference championship, and people will criticize Ryan Silverfield for not winning a conference championship, they haven't won a conference championship since Lawrence Taylor played for that team 45 years ago. Lawrence Taylor is 65 years old. That's the last time they won a conference championship. So if it doesn't work, who the hell cares? It never works at the University of North Carolina. You might as well throw the dart, right? And the argument for why it might work is, and Jeffrey has made this point, the most important factor in the new world of college football is the ability to inspire your boosters to give vast amounts of money so you can have the best roster. And Bill Belichick might just be able to inspire boosters to give enough money that he will have, if not the best roster in the ACC, the second best roster to Clemson, right? And so if you give Bill Belichick the best players in the ACC, and I will tell you, if you look at their schedule next year, schedule's crap. They play Clemson. They really play nobody else. They play Syracuse, right? They play nobody else. They play TCU. They whatever. It's a bunch of – the ACC is not exactly a peak of powers. It's Wake Forest. It's NC State. It's, you know. And so – and the team went 6-6 this year. I don't see any reason why they can't get 8 wins next year, and that to me would be success. And then could they get to a conference championship game? Since that Lawrence Taylor team, not only have they not won a conference championship, they've only been in two conference championship games.
Wow.
What do they have to lose? And who else, by the way, who did they forego in to hire Bill Belichick? It doesn't feel like people were lining up to take that job. The coach at Tulane, who just got his brains beat out by Memphis and Army, took his name out of the running for that job. So I don't really know who you would have gotten. There's not some compelling candidate who's better than Bill Belichick. He certainly is interesting, and I think the financial aspect of it, the inspired boosters, is the best reason to think that it might just work.
My controversial take is I think it's going to be okay. I think it's going to go just okay. They'll win 6, 7, 8 games a season. That's kind of how I think it's going to go.
I don't think 6 is okay.
You don't think 6 is okay?
I don't think 6 is. 6 is what got Mac fired this year, right? Yeah. So I don't think 6 is okay. I think okay is 8, right? And maybe, oh, what, it could be 8 and then 7 and then 8 again and whatever else. That, to me, is okay. Will there ever be a game, ever be a year where they get to a conference championship game? To me, that would be the bar of whether it's a the bar of whether it's a success is, have you gotten to a conference championship game? And I'll say yes. I think they'll get to a conference championship game. I would bet yes.
All they would have to do to make it to a conference championship game, yeah, you got to beat SMU. They could do it.
You got to be better than Syracuse. You got to be better than, you know, this version of Florida State. You got to be better than whatever. But, like, you know, it's not that lofty a goal, right?
Right.
And now, if you're at, do I think he's going to come in and dominate college? No, that's stupid. Of course not. I don't think anyone would. But again, like, who exactly were they going to hire? They were going to hire Jeff Munkin from Army. Well, you know, whatever. Like, would he even? He's never dealt with the NIL. He's never dealt with the portal, and he's, you know, would he have inspired the alums to give a vast amount of money? I don't think so. So I would be entertained. You know, if I were a North Carolina fan, I would be entertained by this. And if not, and if it doesn't work out, I got basketball.
Jeff, this is fantastic. Thank you.
See ya.
That was Jeff Calkins, columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show every morning from 9 to 11 a.m. on these airwaves. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Calkins. When we come back, we got to jump into the Blitz. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 99 FM, ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. Every day on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we do the Blitz, and we got to do it again right now. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Earlier today, Travis Hunter was named the AP College Player of the Year. Connor, question for you. When was the last time the AP Player of the Year did not win the Heisman Trophy?
So there's been a lot of conversation about the Heisman Trophy this year. It's been one of the better races I think we have had in a while. And what's fun about it is it does not involve a college quarterback, which I love. On one side, you have Travis Hunter, two-way superstar, wide receiver, quarterback, Colorado, you know him. On the other side, you have Ashton Jeanty doing something that we haven't seen since Barry Sanders. To be quite honest with you, he probably would have broken Barry Sanders' record if he wasn't sitting out of so many second halves because Boise was burying people. I have made my take known. I think it should go to Ashton Jeanty. I think that he is doing something that is phenomenal. He got that team to the college football playoff. If I were voting, I would have voted for Ashton Jeanty, but the AP voted for Travis Hunter. And I don't necessarily have an argument against it. That's the thing. I think we have two, you know, guys this season that both deserve the win. A co-Heisman would be great. But the AP College Football Player of the Year has shown us historically who wins the Heisman Trophy. You asked me, when was the last time an AP Player of the Year did not win the Heisman Trophy? Well, George, I have an answer for you. Mm-hmm. It's 2015. Christian McCaffrey, Stanford running back, don't know if you've heard of him, won the AP Player of the Year. Do you know who won the Heisman Trophy that year?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was one another running back.
It was.
It was one Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry. Also, sure you've heard of him, Derrick Henry.
Once or twice.
That was the last time the AP Player of the Year did not win the Heisman, and it was Derrick Henry beating Christian McCaffrey. When you go back and you look through the list, here it is right here, Travis Hunter, 2024. Probably going to win the Heisman.
Probably.
Jaden Daniels, Heisman. Caleb Williams, Heisman. Bryce Young, this one, we paused for a moment because we were like, did Bryce Young win the Heisman? He did. Bryce Young won the Heisman. Devontae Smith, Heisman. Joe Burrow, absolutely won the Heisman. Most people would argue the greatest season we have ever seen in college football, the best team we've ever seen in college football. Might be right. That 2019 LSU team was unbelievable. Unbelievable to watch. Kyler Murray the year before that, Baker Mayfield the year before that, Lamar Jackson, and then Christian McCaffrey. And then when you go further back, you have to go all the way to 2009 before you got an AP Player of the Year that did not win the Heisman. Sue won the AP Player of the Year in 2009, and in 2009, your Heisman winner was Mark Ingram. So basically, The only possible way the AP Player of the Year doesn't win the Heisman is if an Alabama running back wins it. And I don't think that's going to happen this year.
Probably not.
Probably not. You had to vote, George, I don't know if I've actually gotten your opinion on this. If you had to vote Heisman, who would you give it to?
I am in complete agreeance with you. I would put my vote for Ashton Jeanty. And this is my kind of argument. It's not a good argument, and but I don't think it's like a bad faith argument by any means against Travis Hunter. It's because they're both very deserving. It's that for me, yes, I understand it's historic what Travis Hunter is doing. He is the best corner on that team. He is also the best receiver on that Colorado team. But I don't think he's the best corner in the country. And I also don't, he's not even the best receiver in his conference.
Mm. But Ashton Jeanty is the best running back in the country.
Straight up.
Straight up.
I mean, what other running back are you going to argue with me?
I think that's where I struggle. I think what Travis Hunter is doing is unbelievable.
Electric. He's the
amount
best
of snaps he's playing is crazy.
It's stamina.
And that's why I'm not going to be mad that he wins the Heisman.
Not at all.
I understand it. Gabe is a huge, huge Travis Hunter supporter in the Heisman, and I get it. I understand it.
Don't get me wrong.
I've just seen Ashton Jeanty do something this year that we've quite literally never seen since Barry Sanders. And it feels like it's going to go not unrecognized, but he's just not going to get the praise he necessarily deserves. Is Boise getting into the college football playoff? Is that the reward he gets? Maybe. And is that enough for reward? Maybe. I can accept that.
He seems like a team guy.
But at the end of the day, if he wasn't sitting out those second halves, he would have broken the record. He would have been the greatest running back we have ever seen in college football, at least for a season stat-wise. I know you could argue Derrick Henry, if even, might be a better running back overall. Sure, I'll listen to that.
Yeah.
But to your point, is Travis Hunter the best wide receiver we've seen in college football this year? No. He just happens to be able to play cornerback and wide receiver at a very high level for a Colorado team that exceeded expectations. Surprise. Gabe and I were telling y'all that was going to happen for a while now. So I get it. I get why Travis Hunter is going to win. Just,
Like I'm saying, don't get me wrong. I love Travis Hunter. I think he's going to be a top five pick in the upcoming draft. He's one of my favorite players available in this year's class. But, I mean, look at it. You've got the receiver from Arizona State that I can never remember his name, who's been hurt. McMillan.
Luther Burden.
You could argue health. Trey Harris. You could argue some that are playing for Georgia, playing for Texas.
Not Georgia.
Maybe not Georgia. They've had the Butterfingers this year. They've had a bad case of it this year.
Yeah.
But
other things too.
Well, let's not get
Georgia. Those Georgia wide receivers, not the greatest group.
Not this year.
Not this year.
Not this year. But you know what I mean? Like, there are more than a handful of other receivers that you could pick out this season that are likely going to win the Biletnikoff. And shoot, I don't even think Travis Hunter's in the running right now for the best DB award.
I do not believe he is. No.
So
he's going to win it, though. If history,
he's going to win the Heisman.
As the AP vote has told us, unless it is a running back from the University of Alabama, the AP Player of the Year usually wins the Heisman. And I think that
I don't think it's undeserved.
Point,
it's well deserved.
Would it be an upset if Jeanty won it at this point?
Yes.
Would it be an upset? You think so?
Yes, I know good and well that Travis Hunter is also the betting favorite, so it would be an upset if Jeanty won it. A livid, I'm talking face turning red, livid, Steve Kerr said the officiating crew last night made a call he has never seen in his NBA career.
Never.
And it cost the Golden State Warriors a 91-90 loss to the Houston Rockets and a chance to go to the NBA Cup semifinals in Las Vegas.
No, Steve Kerr. I'm sorry. Listen, the call was bad. It wasn't a foul at the end of the game. That's not why y'all didn't make it to the semifinals of the NBA Cup. You scored 90 points. Steph, I love you. Love watching Steph. Was a hero for Team USA this offseason during the Olympics. He took a terrible shot. He had time on the shot clock, took a shot. And as he said, if I hit that shot, we're flying to Vegas. True. But you missed that shot, and you left a lot of time on the clock, and the Houston Rockets took advantage of it. You lost that game 91-90. There were a lot of reasons other than the refs of why you lost that game. Also, we were curious, and we went and looked at the fouls or the free throws per team. Very low. The referees were letting these guys beat the crap out of each other, which, to be quite honest, I enjoyed. When I was watching the game, it was an easy watch. Not a lot of whistles. I wonder if the past 2 weeks of NBA action, if the referees may have gotten a memo, hey, swallow the whistle. We're having fourth quarters take 30-plus minutes. Why? Why? It's ridiculous. Swallow the whistle. So I didn't mind the physicality. I'm not shocked that Steve Kerr is complaining about referees. That's his bread and butter. It's what he does. I get it. Overall, though, NBA Cup's been pretty good.
We've had some
I've enjoyed it this year. I've really enjoyed it this year. Players are bought in. You've gotten some great games. The Rockets-Warriors game was a good game. It was a bit of a rock fight, but it was a good old-school basketball game. The Rockets came out on top. Young, hungry team. They are kind of the Pacers of last year for the NBA Cup this year. You could also argue on the other side, though, the Hawks are the Pacers of the NBA Cup this year. Took down the Knicks, 108-100. And Trae Young. We talked about sports hate yesterday.
He's a villain, man.
This is a great sports hate going on because there's seemingly some respect involved in it, though. There's some respect involved in it. Rolled that dice on the Knicks home court. Said, how you like that? And Jalen Brunson gave a perfect answer. If we don't want him rolling dice, we should let him win basketball games. NBA Cup action, I am bought in. Very excited. Bucks-Hawks in the semifinals. Thunder-Rockets in the semifinals. The NBA may not be pleased with it because of the markets, but I'm pleased with it because of the good basketball that we're going to get. But that's going to be it for the Blitz today. We will be back with Small Talk to wrap up the show. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. We got to wrap up the show. Real quick, if you didn't see, Grizzlies PR medical update. Good news, Grizz Nation. Good news. Zach Edey, doubtful. Doubtful for the next game, which means the probable appearance for Zach Edey will be against the Los Angeles Lakers and Anthony Davis. And I don't know if y'all remember, last time Zach Edey played against Anthony Davis, kind of handled him. Could Edey be Davis kryptonite? Maybe. Are we reading a little bit too much into a one-game performance? Maybe. But what do we do on the station? We tell our own story. That's what we're going to do with this. Zach Edey, Anthony Davis, coming soon to a television near you. That's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today, though. I've been Connor Dunning. Thank you for hanging out with me. If you can, come meet me at Hampline in just a few moments. Hosting trivia, 7 p.m. Thank you to King George Italian George, as always, George Ruggiero. We'll be back here same time, same place tomorrow with Parker Fleming to talk Grizzlies. We'll have David Cobb on. For George, I'm Connor. Peace.